Welcome to Registry Matters. We're an independent production. Our opinions are our own. We're thankful for the support of our patrons. You make what we do here possible. And always remember, FYP.
Recording live from FYP Studios East and West, transmitting across the internet on a Sunday. This is episode 359 of Registry Matters. Larry, did you watch Saturday Night Football? Is that why we're here on Sunday?
No, I didn't watch Saturday Night Football. I was actually working and planning on recording yesterday, but we miscommunicated and you didn't know I was actually here ready to go. So
I had no idea. I was watching a movie sacked out on the couch when you said, I'm here. Where's everyone? I'm like, I'm not coming, man. Nope. Not getting off the couch. Why did you told me that you were dying of allergies and you would let me know if you're going to record?
I did say something to that effect, yes. And then I didn't let
so it's not my fault this time. Not my fault. All right. We're here.
I got well enough. My eyes didn't feel like sandpaper was scrubbing across them. And I said, well, I need to go ahead and pull it together because we have good news tonight.
Good news. Actually, I titled the section that. It'll be good news, everyone. Well, now that we've, that's not burying the lead. What's the spoiler? I guess. I don't know. What are we doing tonight?
Well, for this this episode, it is just Mr. Doom and Gloom.
Of course.
But we do have what I hope is an upbeat report on an important case from the state of Tennessee. And the outcome was fantastic for our side and for PFRs. And we have another segment that you've created. Is this the third or the second one? Anyway, we have a
I think it's the third time.
And then I have an update on the request to cover the sentencing commission, the amendments, and how those will transform how PFRs are given early termination. I was hoping to get an expert to come on and unpack the policies from the sentencing commission as they pertain to PFRs. And lo and behold, I think we have one. One of our listeners is an attorney, and that attorney has graciously agreed to do that. And possibly early as next episode.
And well, get on that.
And the topic is clearly beyond my level of expertise because after the sentencing commission was after it was formulated and put into operation back in the 80s, I realized I was disgusted by the whole concept of having a cash register handout sentencing. So I really haven't followed all that garbage. And then I've learned that most of the time, the recommendations of the commission are not implemented, so I've kind of ignored it. But I'm glad to have an expert, or at least the expert in my mind, this person is. But she says, I'm not an expert. I'm just a lawyer. I said, you'll do just fine.
And she's here.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Well, and then we have the main event. We have this fantastic win from Tennessee.
Well, then let's go right with that. You have this crazy decision in here from the state of Tennessee, and it's a long-running case that we briefly discussed back in 2005. It was in 2021, but it was episode 205, almost exactly, 4 years ago?
4 years ago.
Have we been doing this program that long? Good grief. My recollection is that the trial judge ruled in favor of PFRs, which sounds kind of crazy from Tennessee to begin with. But the state appealed, of course, they appealed to the Sixth Circuit. They ultimately overturned a part of the ruling and remanded the case to the trial court with instructions to the judge. Now, did the trial judge take the necessary steps to satisfy the Court of Appeals?
The trial court did a very good job with the remand, but I'm confident the state of Tennessee will not be amused with the outcome.
Not amused, huh? And I remember this particular case ever so slightly. And at the time we discussed it, I did my own research, Larry. ChatGPT, actually it was before ChatGPT, so I didn't do that. She is a liberal, clearly a liberal do-gooder, appointed by the communist Bill Clinton. Now let me go through some of her leftist decisions. On March 14th of 2014, Judge Trauger, is how I'm going with it, Trauger?
Yep, Aletha Trauger.
Oh, geez. I'm glad you didn't put that in there. Okay, so Judge Trauger issued a preliminary injunction ordering Tennessee to recognize the marriages of three same-sex couples consummated in other states. Now, this was well in advance of the Supreme Court's decision. She said, at this point, all signs indicate, in the eyes of the United States Constitution, the plaintiff's marriages will be placed on equal footing with those of heterosexual couples, and that prescriptions against same-sex marriage will soon become a footnote in the annals of American history. On March 23, 2017, Judge Trauger issued a preliminary injunction prohibiting Rutherford County from subjecting children to solitary confinement while their case proceeds. And then on July 3rd of 2018, the same judge struck down a law that would allow Tennessee officials to revoke driver's licenses of defendants who could not pay their court costs. In September of 2019, Judge Trauger warned that a Tennessee law that restricts voter registration had chilling effects on individuals and organizations that were trying to register new voters in Tennessee. Then Judge Trauger struck down the law, ruling that there was no basis that the law would benefit Tennesseans. Another one of her activist decisions occurred on July 9, 2021, when Judge Trauger issued a preliminary injunction blocking a Tennessee law that would require businesses and other entities to allow transgender people to use the public restroom that matches their gender to post a government-prescribed warning sign. Is this the type of judge we want on the bench, Larry?
Well, I'm sure that the majority of people in Tennessee do not, but the lefty that was in office appointed and got this judge confirmed. But I guess it depends on your perspective. I'm pretty happy with that litany of cases you just mentioned. Also, I'm quite happy with the PFR decision she just made.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, well, then let's set this up a little bit. In late 2021, following consolidation and reassignment of the plaintiff's cases, the court granted preliminary injunctive relief from the plaintiffs. In March 2023, the court denied the defendant's motion for summary judgment, granted the plaintiff's motion for summary judgment on the basis that the application of Tennessee PFR Registration Act to the plaintiffs violated the ex post facto clause, and converted the preliminary injunction into a permanent injunction. Specifically, the court enjoined the state from enforcing any provision of the act against the plaintiffs and from requiring the plaintiffs to comply with any portion of the act. The court also directed them to take all reasonably necessary steps within their power to ensure that the plaintiffs are not included in Tennessee's PFR registry and are not mistakenly treated as if they are or should be included on the registry by state, local, or other officials. In addition, the court granted the plaintiff's request for a declaratory judgment and issued a declaration that the retroactive application of Tennessee's PFR registry-related laws to these plaintiffs for crimes that they committed prior to the effective date of the statute, creating that the registry would violate the ex post facto clause of the United States Constitution. That's a lot of word salad. What occurred next?
Well, as we expected at the time, they appealed and the Sixth Circuit reversed in part and remanded the case with instructions that the court vacate the declaratory judgment, dissolve the injunction against Governor Lee, and dismiss the governor from the suit based on lack of standing, and modify the injunction against the director of the TBI, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. And that was Doe versus Lee, decided by the Sixth Circuit in 2024. And I think we covered it. 102 Federal 4th, 330-332. The appellate court explained that the plaintiffs lacked standing to sue Governor Lee as they failed to show that he had any role in enforcement of the individual criminal laws of the state, or that he had otherwise done anything or was doing anything that might injure the plaintiffs. The Sixth Circuit affirmatively found that the plaintiffs had standing to sue Director Rausch, noting that the fact that the defendants apparently concede that the plaintiffs have standing to sue the director.
Then the court referenced the framework for analyzing whether a retroactive law is punitive in violation of the ex post facto clause, as articulated in Smith versus Doe, that's 538 U.S. 84 N97 from 2003, and that's also Kennedy versus, that's Martinez Mendoza, and that's 372 U.S. 144, pages 168 and 69 from 1963. And summarized Supreme Court and Sixth Circuit precedent addressing retroactive laws targeting sex offenders. There are the Kennedy-Mendoza-Martinez factors you mention all the time.
They are there. And specifically, the court noted that in Cutshaw versus Sundquist, and that's a 1999 case from the Sixth Circuit, It had upheld a predecessor to the current Tennessee PFR Registration Act, finding that its reporting and registration requirements did not violate the Ex Post Facto Clause. But see, the states just can't leave things alone. They just can't. So Cutchall, if they left the registry the way it was, they could be doing just fine. But they don't leave things alone. And a few years after Cutchall, the Sixth Circuit upheld an early version of the current PFR registration against a nearly identical challenge, finding no reason to deviate from its previous conclusion. And that of other circuits, that the law did not violate the Ex Post Facto Clause. And that was, they had decided that in Doe's versus Bredesen, which was a 2007 case. But then there's more to come later, because all that changed as the Sixth Circuit's law, they reversed themselves in 2016.
And I read that too, though. But as the court noted in Doe's versus Lee, the version of the act in effect at the time that the case was decided did not impose any restrictions on where registrants could live, work, or move. Didn't that change when the Sixth Circuit decided Doe's versus Snyder?
Exactly. It did. You've heard me harp about that all these years we've done this podcast. If you don't impose any disabilities or restraints, you can register people for eternity. But in 2016, the Sixth Circuit considered Michigan's PFR registry law, which is similar to the Tennessee Act, and enjoined the Ex Post Facto enforcement of two amendments that prohibited registrants from living, working, or lording within 1,000 feet of a school, and required all registrants to appear in person immediately to update information such as new vehicles, internet identifiers, email accounts, and etc. And that was Doe's versus Snyder from the Sixth Circuit. Applying the Kennedy-Mendoza factors, in that case, the court found that the two amendments went far beyond Alaska law, authorizing publicly available registries of PFRs at issue in Smith versus Doe. See, again, they just can't help themselves. Insofar as they subjected Michigan registrants to onerous conditions that closely resembled banishment and public shaming, and had a number of similarities to probation and parole. And so based on those findings, Judge Trauger held that the amendments imposed punishment and that their retroactive application to the plaintiffs whose offenses were completed well before the amendments went into effect was unconstitutional and must therefore cease. And she quoted, again, Doe versus Snyder, which is the law of the circuit.
But Tennessee appealed despite the fact that the liberal leftist ruling was predicated on the law of the circuit. Did I interpret that right?
Yes, she's doing her job. You've interpreted exactly right. Also, you might want to throw in another mix that comes. We hear this constantly out of conservative states like Tennessee. They proclaim how frugal they are with public funds, and they proclaim that they watch every dollar as if it's their own, but yet they have ample money to fight a losing battle like this, because they're ultimately going to lose. I don't think the law of the circuit is going to change. And also, they claim to be the guardians of the Constitution and individual rights. I think this qualifies as hypocrisy, and I wish my conservative listeners would understand this. You vote for these people, and they tell you this stuff, and then they do exactly the opposite, and you give them a pass on it.
Oh, you know, and now I can't. Well, is it playing? I don't think it's playing. Is it playing? I don't think it's playing. Anyway, I had the hypocrisy clip queued. Tech challenges tonight. In the appeal of this case, though, the Sixth Circuit synthesized Smith, Cutchall, Bredesen, and Snyder to hold as follows. Any provisions of Tennessee's Act analogous to those discussed in Smith, Bredesen, and Cutchall pass constitutional muster. But those which mirror Michigan's 2006 and 2011 amendments to the Michigan PFR Registry Act, also known as SORA, enjoined by Snyder, must fail. This makes some sense, do you think?
It does. The court stated that full analysis of Mendoza-Martinez factors is not necessary because the provisions of Tennessee's Act are either the same or directly mirror those discussed in its prior cases. This dispute can be resolved simply by applying our binding precedent. The Act's registration, reporting, and surveillance components are not the type that have traditionally been considered punishment. Those are okay, folks. Get over it. They're constitutional. So the registry kept by the state and disclosed publicly is constitutionally sound at the moment. but a regulatory scheme that severely restricts where people can live, work, and loiter, that causes them, that categorizes them into tiers, ostensibly corresponding to their present dangerousness, without an individualized assessment, and requires time-consuming, cumbersome in-person reporting, is something altogether different and far more troubling than Alaska's registration law was when they decided Smith versus Doe. Get over it. They got that case right. Smith versus Doe was not punitive. Things have changed since then.
Yeah, since then. And that sounds amazingly similar to what you've talked about for the past 8 years here on the show.
It does indeed. Aren't you happy that the courts are listening to us?
I believe that they are patrons, actually.
I think they are, particularly all the circuit courts, I think, are.
More and more, it seems that the courts are listening to us and following your legal doctrine. And it's important to note that Judge Trauger, in accordance with the Sixth Circuit's instructions, issued a post-remand order vacating the order and entry of judgment, granting in part the defendant's motion for summary judgment with respect to the claims against Governor Lee and dismissing all claims against the governor. Now, what did Judge Trauger do other than execute those directives from the Court of Appeals?
Not a hell of a lot. Judge Trauger reaffirmed her prior holding that the plaintiffs were entitled, that's the challengers, they were entitled to summary judgment, at least in part. She noted that it continues to be the case that the plaintiffs have established through undisputed facts that the director caused them to be subject to at least one retroactive punitive requirement under Snyder. Judge Trauger also ordered the parties to brief the two unresolved issues identified by the Sixth Circuit that had not been addressed in the party's summary judgment filings. That is, the court concluded that aside from dismissing the governor, that the Sixth Circuit's ruling required modification of the injunction in two ways. First, the court must limit the injunction to the provisions found to be punitive based on provision-by-provision analysis of the act. So she had to do a little bit of work going through provision-by-provision. And second, it must craft the injunction to focus in particular on what the director can and cannot do under Tennessee's scheme, meaning if the director doesn't have the power, you can't order the director to do what the director can't do.
And then the TBI plaintiffs are not entitled to a permanent injunction because, one, their claims lack merit, two, they have not shown that the equities favor permanent injunctive relief, and three, the court cannot force Director Rausch to take any affirmative action, as opposed to simply prohibiting him from continuing to engage in conduct that violates the plaintiff's constitutional rights. Now, what did the court say about the first assertion?
Well, let me collect the writer. Whoever wrote this didn't write it right. It was at the at that beginning of that paragraph. What basically this should be saying is that this is what the state of Tennessee argued. So I left out Tennessee argued that the plaintiffs were not entitled to a permanent injunction.
You should slacker, fire that dude.
You should, or you just turn over to AI. But that did not go well for the state. That argument did not go well.
And what about the second assertion, which was they have not shown that the equities favor permanent injunctive relief?
Judge Trauger didn't like that one much either. Trauger held that Director Rausch clearly has specific connection with the enforcement of the challenge classifications, because that was a requirement that they classify the people in the tiers, and the TBI was told to do that, so that was his. A finding that classifying plaintiffs as violent sexual offenders or offenders against children is unconstitutional and can be remedied by enjoining Rausch from making and enforcing such classifications under Tennessee Section 40-39-218 and ordering him instead to exercise his statutory duty in a way that does not violate the plaintiff's right by classifying them as sexual offenders and providing them a notice of that classification. Rausch does not have sovereign immunity from this challenge. That's what Judge Trauger had. So he lost on his argument.
And then the last one, what about the assertion that the court cannot force Director Rausch to take any affirmative action, as opposed to simply prohibiting him from continuing to engage in conduct that violates the plaintiff's constitutional rights?
Judge Trauger had an answer to that. She said the director has a special relation to the act and by virtue of his office is expressly directed to see to its enforcement. He falls within the ex parte Young exception to state sovereign immunity. The director implicitly recognizes the power of his limited record keeping and information providing responsibilities and their role in enforcement.
What was that you put in there? What was ex parte Young exception?
Well, we should unmute the attorney if they know something about immunity, but you have to overcome immunity because governments have sovereign immunity. But there was a case back in 1908, back when I was working in the Teddy Roosevelt administration. And it established a significant legal principle regarding sovereign immunity. The case arose when shareholders of the Northern Pacific Railway challenged a Minnesota law that imposed strict regulations on railroad rates. They sought to prevent the state attorney general, Edward Young, from enforcing the law, arguing that it was unconstitutional. Young claimed that the 11th Amendment barred the lawsuit as it prohibited suits against states by citizens of other states. However, the Supreme Court ruled that the lawsuit could proceed because it was directed against Young in his official capacity, not against the state itself.
Now, since we're about to wrap this up, what is exactly the good news?
Oh, this is such good news. The good news is Judge Trauger ruled almost exactly the way she did back in 2021. Judge Trauger ordered the director to perform his affirmative duty under the Act to classify the plaintiffs in a manner that does not violate the ex post facto clause of the U.S. Constitution, meaning that he may classify them as generic PFRs, but shall no longer classify them as either violent sexual offenders or offenders against children. He shall perform his affirmative duty under the Act to notify plaintiffs of their updated classification, and he will be enjoined from permitting the TBI to enter, modify, or maintain data in the SOR, the Sex Offender Registry, that would cause any plaintiff to be classified as violent sexual offender under Tennessee Code 40-39-202, subsection 30, or that would cause Doe 5 and 7 to be classified as an offender against children under that same section based on offenses they committed prior to enactment of those amendments. And then,
I got this one. So also the TBI director shall cause notice to be published with extensive information for PFRs in Tennessee. The highlights of the notice are that Tennessee code annotated 40-31-211 paragraph A, I guess, residential and employment restrictions with respect to a public school, private or parochial school, licensed daycare center or other child care facility do not apply to any plaintiff based on any pre-enactment offense. Tennessee code annotated, same thing I just read, residential and employment restrictions with respect to a public park, recreation center, or public athletic field available for use by the general public do not apply to any plaintiff based on a pre-enactment offense. Lastly, Tennessee code annotated 40-31-211, which is what I've read three times now, residential and employment restrictions with respect to a playground defined as an indoor or outdoor facility that is intended for recreation of children and owned by the state, a local government, or a not-for-profit organization, and includes any parking lot, apartment, parking lot. What did you put there?
I have no idea. I cut and pasted something, didn't I?
Man, and includes any parking lot adjacent to the indoor-outdoor facility do not apply to any plaintiff based on any pre-enactment offense. So what happens next?
I would be surprised if there's not another appeal to the Sixth Circuit. And when they lose at the Sixth Circuit, assuming that the Sixth Circuit doesn't vacate their decision in Doe versus Snyder, decide that they got it wrong, which I don't think they're likely to do, then it means that there's a possible cert petition to the U.S. Supreme Court, because Tennessee is not going to want to have to abide by this ruling from this leftist communist judge. They're just not.
All right. So then you said they go back to the Sixth Circuit, and I'm going to assume that they would rule the same way.
Well, we've seen some bizarre stuff recently. You remember the 11th Circuit we just talked about where they decided to hear the case en banc?
Yes. But if they did that on their own.
If they were to go back to the Sixth Circuit, I'm not enough of an expert on whether it would go back to the same panel that we'd get another three-judge panel. But let's just assume they get a completely new three-judge panel. The tradition of the circuits are that they don't overturn another panel on the same case. So Tennessee's got a tough road to hoe to get to that end, because they have to show that everything is significantly different on the second bite at the apple that they're going to take, and that the Doe versus Snyder needs to be abandoned, and a panel is not going to make that decision, I don't believe. So that means that if they take it to the panel of three judges, which is where it'll go first, the three judges, if they make the same decision, and say, yes, Judge Trauger got it right this time. It's solidly grounded in the law of the circuit. Then the only thing they can do is ask for the full court to review, or the full court might decide like the 11th did on their own initiative to review it. And who knows what they'll do if the full court hears it.
I see. Alrighty then. Okay. Well, that's some good news for us. How many people does this affect, do you think?
Well, it would affect everyone who was on the Tennessee PFR registry for conduct that occurred prior to the enactment of these amendments a few years ago. So it would be, my guess would be well over half of the registers, maybe as many as 3/4.
Wow, that's cool. Well, go Tennessee. Maybe our big patron over there would benefit from it. Or is he from Kentucky?
We have a patron in Tennessee.
Yes. All right.
Yeah.
Are you a first-time listener of Registry Matters? Well, then make us a part of your daily routine and subscribe today. Just search for Registry Matters through your favorite podcast app, hit the subscribe button, and you're off to the races. You can now enjoy hours of sarcasm and snark from Andy and Larry on a weekly basis. Oh, and there's some excellent information thrown in there too. Subscribing also encourages others of you people to get on the bandwagon and become regular Registry Matters listeners. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to Registry Matters right now. Help us keep fighting and continue to say FYP.
Well then, let's do this new section. And this is titled What to Do Next. And this is from a first-time poster from a younger PFR who's struggling to understand how things got this way, what to do next, and how to move forward. And I want to focus on the early stages, mental health, family chaos, and trying to rebuild after the chaos.
Sounds good to me. The root causes of what practical steps someone in this position can actually take. I'll handle some strategy and context on policy expectations, but let's get to what resonates most. Here's what the person's feeling. I'm young. I feel my life is over, but I know I need to rebuild, right? That's what you're going to feel if you're a youngster and you just got shot with all this stuff. You got to register. You got to go to prison. You're going to come out with all these cables and ropes attached to your, a chain and shackle, whatever they used to call it, ball and chain.
Or possibly like wrapped up in a straitjacket and then with some cinder block boots put on and thrown in the water. That's probably a decent analogy. So let's set the scene. So this guy is 21, just convicted or newly required to register, and he feels like he's stuck. He's got depression, risky behavior, chaotic home life. Now, how common is it for people entering the registry to have this mix of mental health struggle and family dysfunction in their history?
I can personally vouch it's pretty common.
Yeah, I bet.
Many PFRs report also childhood instability, trauma, early exposure to adult material, often combined with mental health issues like depression, anxiety, and self-medication. And that's not to say this is an excuse for anything, but it's context. The policy side is only beginning to acknowledge that the underlying causes exist, not just danger, but damage to issues people are dealing with. You know, I came through the foster care system. They actually had foster care. They had foster care back in the 1800s?
I would imagine it was just like a uncle or a cousin or somebody took over the charge. What was it? Like you were a ward? What would be the term for that?
Well, they had these poor houses they would take you to if your parents died. They had these orphanages, and they were usually garbage. But then they would place you with family or somebody who would volunteer to take care of you. Even back in those days, they had some rudimentary system of foster care.
And I bet you were treated like a freaking redheaded stepchild, too, because you're like, I got another mouth to feed. You better do some work. Is that what they said to you, Larry?
That's what they did. They put you to work making money.
Now, that matches the comments from the community, though. So many were quick to say, you're human. You're facing struggles, and that matters. Now, as a practical step, let's say you recognize those issues from your own life. Now, what's your first move, do you think?
Well, if you can find professional help, we didn't have that back in those days.
There weren't professionals back then.
they didn't have all this the soft stuff we have today. Therapist, counselor, or group, ideally one that understands PFR specific issues. Many are scared to reach out because of stigma, but support groups like SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, was recommended several times in the responses, and it's really just a starting point. And you could go to SAA and you don't have to say anything. You just show up. That's what I'm told. Now, I haven't been there, but that's what I've been told.
And another thing about SAA, people new to this worry, am I going to be outed? Is it safe to show up? Can you talk about privacy in those groups or what people need to know?
Well, I've been told that 12-step programs are built around anonymity and confidentiality as a core value. You can say as much or as little as you want. Now, that might not be completely true. If you say nothing, people are going to be kind of suspicious of your presence. But you can use a fake name. You're not even obligated to share your story if you're uncomfortable. From a strategy angle, judges, supervising probation officers, even treatment providers often view participation in support groups as a positive step. It shows accountability and willingness to improve and change.
Accountability is the theme here. One person said in the thread, I don't use Reddit much, but I needed some accountability, and no one in my real life even knows about this account. Larry, what kind of accountability work are we talking about in your experience?
Well, it looks different for each individual, but for some, just showing up to meetings and checking in. For others, formal therapy or even online forums like this one, places to write your story and get honest feedback. We do a little bit of that here. It's about not hiding from it, but not letting shame lock you down either. Accountability can mean a trusted sponsor, a mentor, or just a friend who's willing to listen without judgment.
Now, let's talk about the family angle. The person that we're referring to, hypervigilance, stressful home, and a comment from a PFR spouse echoes all that. Not all parents are capable of parenting. You know, Larry, when you have kids, they don't come with a manual. I don't know if you know that or not. You're just kind of like, hey, here's your kid. What do you do now? Some haven't ever been taught, or they probably learned what should be done from their parents, and they were dysfunctional. So if you're just recognizing that your household left you with baggage, how do you address that now?
Well, that's a significant question. Now, you telling me when you have a child, when they deliver the child, they don't hand you a manual? I thought they did.
No, there's no manual. There's one called Dr. Spock's, but that thing's 50 years old.
Older, but anyway. So.
Oh, is it? Okay.
But acknowledge it wasn't your fault. Whatever problems you had in childhood. Now, most of us don't choose where we're born and who we're born to. Childhood isn't something you get to choose. You win the ovarian lottery or you lose the ovarian lottery. Recognizing that baggage is step one. For what you know, professional therapy, if you can access it, especially trauma-informed therapy. Many community mental health centers have sliding scales, or at least they used to. So I'm reluctant to say that because these days I know they keep cutting back on all that stuff. Some registered advocacy groups have lists of PFR-friendly counselors. Education helps. One of the top comments mentioned Out of the Shadows by Patrick Carnes, a practical book for understanding addiction, habits, and boundaries in plain language.
And for those who find it hard to read, audiobooks or even finding interviews with the author is a start. Now, Larry, you brought up the ovarian lottery, and could you explain that idea a little bit? Because I find that to be a pretty excellent way to categorize things.
Well, I heard it from Warren Buffett first, but
really?
I suspect, yeah, he said that on an interview one time, and I loved it. But I suspect that very few people that are born in these poverty-ridden nations without drinkable water, without shelter, I doubt they would have chosen to be born there. So I just think that when you are lucky enough to be born in a land like the United States or Western Europe, places where there's relatively peace and stability, and a system that largely works most of the time, for the majority of the people, you won the ovarian lottery. you didn't have to go out and fight for drinking water. You didn't have to go wash your clothes in the creek. All that stuff is here for you in the United States. People that live in poverty in the United States are living so much better than so many people that are living in developing nations.
I understand. So where should people begin?
Well, you don't need to figure it all out at once. Healing isn't a straight line. Days will be tough. People relapse. And I can personally vouch for that on coping mechanisms, substance use. They feel isolated. What matters is persistence and taking steps to get back up when you backslide. The sad thing that's not in the script here is that our system of supervision isn't designed in most instances to help you when you have a relapse. That's it's an I got you moment. And it shouldn't be that way. If we're trying to make you a better unit, we should be trying to help you when you have relapse.
Now, let's also address the all-too-common feeling that, quote-unquote, my life is over. You've got so much life, especially at the age of 21. You likely have, I don't know, what's the average age? Somewhere in the 80s? So you got 60-something years left to go. And so in practical terms, what does rebuilding look like from week to week even?
Well, it's... In my book, I think it's a gradual thing about building one block at a time, tiny wins, attending your meetings, keeping up your probation if you have any probation, building routines, setting a goal on your calendar that you're going to achieve something by a certain day. It could be as small as cooking for yourself or as big as finding a job resource or at least submitting an application for a good job. And over time, these things will add up because some of them will come through. Rebuilding doesn't mean erasing your history, but it means learning, growing, and showing people and yourself that you're more than your worst moment.
There's a lot of fear here about how people will react. Family, friends, the community. Several people have stressed compassion. You deserve a chance to make better choices. Now, Larry, how do you handle conversations with loved ones as you rebuild?
Well, some say that start with honesty, but move at a pace that you can handle and also they can handle. Not everyone needs all the details right away from the beginning. So I guess I'm trying to say be gentle and assess them as you're being honest. And sometimes it's all about showing, not telling, and demonstrating that you're working on improving yourself, attending groups, abiding by the law, doing therapy if you can find it. Some of your loved ones may need to process their own feelings first. Others might never be supportive, and that's the hard truth. But what you can control is growing and improving yourself.
And you mentioned law. Let's hit this as we close out this section. For newer PFRs wondering about their obligations, where does legal strategy come into this?
Well, it comes in very much. If you want to stay out on the mend, you need to know your requirements. Registration, reporting for your registration and your supervision, travel restrictions, any employment restrictions, all of it. Don't rely on what you heard in gossip. Find your state's registry website. If you can find information about what you're required to do, talk to an attorney if you have that resource. And seek out people in your area. Sometimes even a probation officer can clarify requirements. Violations sometimes and often are accidental, but they get many new PFRs into trouble. So prioritize keeping yourself compliant so you can focus on yourself and rebuilding.
I got to throw our own plug in here, is that this is an incredible resource here, particularly you, Larry, in this area here about legal requirements, all that stuff. You are the man. And I will humbly say that that's true. So to sum it up, if you are young, overwhelmed, maybe facing all of this for the first time, hopefully you're facing it for the last time, you are not your mistakes. The path to rebuilding is slow but real. Professional help, genuine support groups, honest accountability, practical routines, and compassion for yourself.
Yes, and the advice you just gave, you actually are a fine example of doing those things. What was it, 10 years ago when you were released from that big house?
How about 11 and a half
years ago. Well, you had limited resources and you were living in a motel room that was not, certainly wasn't the Taj Mahal.
But it wasn't roach infested either. I will say that. It could have been way worse.
It could have been way worse, but you did all the things that you needed to do. But don't forget education. Learn why and how things got to this point. You need to do that for your own growth and everyone you hope to reconnect with. And always keep your legal obligations front and center so you don't get tripped up again. Know what you're required to do. I can't guarantee they won't prosecute you for something that's not in the law, because I can't guarantee that humans don't have that they're not have fallible moments where a PSFR registry tracker might go out and present a judge with an application for an arrest warrant. But I can guarantee you this, they have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt unless you choose to plead guilty. So if you get some minor trip up and it's not in the law, as long as you're following the law and they tell you to do things that are not in the law, a good attorney is going to say, well, Your Honor, we stipulate to everything that's in the complaint. The only problem is everything that's in the complaint, none of that's against the law. He's not required to do those things. So,
I was going to mention, I think it was the first year that I was registering, so it would have been 2015. That was the first time, and I'm going to use the term that people use, like unlived, so I was untransportationed at the time, and I had put the dates in Google Calendar to send me alerts like 2 weeks. I was going to make sure that the date that I had to register was forefront on my mind. So like almost daily reminders that this date is coming, this date is coming, this date is coming. And I was so freaking stressed out the first time that I registered. I was like about to have a heart attack to make sure that I was there on time, doing the right thing, and had to get a ride from somebody. It was serious, serious bullshit. But I made it. So that said, though, it's a tough road. And you do not have to walk it alone, and you should not walk it alone. You have, I don't know, a million people that have walked this path before you. I don't know what that number is. There's been a crap ton of people that have been down this road before you. The community matters. A lesson from almost every person that I've ever heard from is that take note from the people around you. And so, hey, welcome to the club.
So, well, I think it sounds like a good segment. Stay safe, stay helpful, reach out for help as you need it, for support, whatever you need. And until next time, which is going to be next weekend, I hope, with a fabulous thing about the, you say that we have our, yes, I see that person here. We have,
she's here.
We have someone who's going to be walking us through all the favorable things that came out of the commission that will help PFRs going forward.
Fabulous. Is that you teasing the segment next week?
Yes, you want to tease it better? You could even let her come on and tease it herself.
Do you want to tease it yourself? If you say yes, I will unmute you and you are live. Just say go. Oh, she doesn't have a microphone. That's some garbage. You just saying that. All right.
So,
well, that is the end of the show. Do you have any other parting words, Larry?
Well, sorry I missed yesterday, but man, it was bad. And I don't know what's causing the allergy season to run so late this year. I don't know if I've changed to become allergic to more stuff, but I don't ever feel allergies in November.
I don't know what to tell you. Who are your football picks for the day?
Oh, I haven't paid any attention to it, but I'm sure I'm going to win.
All right. Well, head over to registrymatters.co for show notes and links to everywhere you need to go. You can leave email, send email at registrymatterscast@gmail.com. Old-fashioned voicemail if you want to. Pick up a phone and dial some numbers. It's 747-227-4477. And as those who have joined us here in Discord, listening to us live here on the Sunday afternoon, that can be done over at patreon.com/registrymatters for as little as a buck a month. And it shows support for the program and helps Larry go out and buy some discounted green beans on the shelf that they're about to throw into the dumpster or something like that. Sound about right?
How did you know that I shop that way?
I can imagine. Do you know this movie called Big Daddy?
No.
So this movie is just this is the most dysfunctional father on the planet. And this kid kind of shows up on his doorstep. And so he's taking him around, just showing him how he lives. And he goes into the grocery store and he throws the cans on the floor to dent them. And then they're half off.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good trick. I'll try that.
All right. Well, All right. Have a great night, Larry. I'll talk to you all soon.
So I'll call you at 7 in the morning.
Do it.
You've been listening to FYP.